Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren. Heard on
KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. We've got Mr. Joe Goldberg.
I'm in the house. It's still here, although we had tornadoes last night in the Chicago area in the middle. It was 74, and now it's 22. So that's not a bad day of a weather change. Sirens are going off in February, and we're in the basement.
But you've always got sirens going off.
That's right. That's science. Either that or it's just a whistle in my head. Right?
Yeah, same thing. You know, it's all a voice.
Well, the blow away.
Yeah. Now, speaking of voices, we've got another great writer back again today. And so his new book is Cotton Malone's Book 18, and it's called Atlas, The Atlas Maneuver. So, Steve Berry, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Steve, how do you just keep this going? What's going on with you? You're just a writing machine.
Well, it's my job. It is the job that I signed up for, but it is nice that I still keep getting ideas for these books, and this was a good idea, and it turned out really well, and luckily I've got ideas for the next 3 years, so I'm okay for a while.
Wow, you keep her going. Listen, I see that, again, you really bring in the historical fiction part of it, like in this one you're bringing in World War II, 1945 and stuff. How do you pick what historical parts or things that have happened to incorporate in your book?
Well, I don't really pick them. They kind of pick me. So they kind of, you know, the idea is to sort of pop where I am. You know, I say all the time, if you're looking for an idea, you'll never find it. You have to be where the idea will find you and just kind of pop out. And this book kind of had an interesting evolution because I had Yamashita's Gold in my idea file, and I wanted to do something with Bitcoin, and the two didn't seem related until I thought about it for a while, and then I figured out a way to bring them all together. So it was just two separate concepts that kind of came together nicely.
Well, I had another question in mind, but since you brought up the Bitcoin aspect of the book, I'll just go with it from here.
Sure.
Bitcoin is something that not too many people know about, cryptocurrency. It's a commercial on TV that, you know, everything else. You picked it as a topic for a suspense thriller. I think you had a neighbor or friend who educated you on it. Tell me how you were able to take this cryptocurrency idea, this Bitcoinian idea, and turn it into a suspense thriller.
See, I didn't know anything about Bitcoin. I mean, it was just a mystery to me. I had no clue what it was. And like I said, you're right. I have a neighbor who's very knowledgeable on it. So he taught me a lot, but he also referred me to several books that I was able to read. And I got even more books than I read. And I spent about 6 months to get a handle on Bitcoin, to begin to understand it. And as I was doing that, I discovered there's a flaw in the Bitcoin system. There's a flaw the Bitcoiners don't like to talk a lot about, but it is there and it does exist. And I decided there's where I'm going to go. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go after that flaw, and I'm going to, you know, deal with it and exploit it in the Atlas maneuver. And along the way, I'm going to show you how Bitcoin works and hopefully educate you on it. And that was one of the purposes of the book. So I think when you're done reading this book, the reader's going to say, well, I think I got a much better handle. I think I know what that is now. And that was the whole point.
Would you say Bitcoin is a character in the book?
Kind of, yeah. I would say so. Yeah, I would say it becomes almost a character in the book because we learn all about it. We learn it's all about its, you know, its inner workings, its creation, the legends about it, the secrets about it, the flaws in it. We learn all that. So sure, I would say it's a character, yeah.
And you're thinking that your loyal readership, of which you only have a few tens of a million, will not have their eyes roll back on their head saying, oh, Bitcoin, I don't know anything about that. They'll shy away from this one. They're going to say, Steve's going to do it right.
I hope so. I hope they do because I tried to make it where you could get it, and it's part of the plot. This is not just something thrown in there. It is the plot of the novel. So as the plot unfolds, you actually see Bitcoin at work, and you see how it functions and what it does. And I'm hoping that will give you an even greater understanding of what it works. And when it's all over and done with, you'll probably say, well, you know, that's not as mysterious as I thought it was.
Did you play the Bitcoin realm to play it to understand a little bit better?
I did play a little bit, yes. I did play it a little bit so I could understand how it works firsthand, yeah.
How'd you do?
I'm fine. Something you hold. Something you roll over. That's one thing you got to learn very quickly about Bitcoin. That's a long-term investment.
Well, you'll have to let us know in 5 years what's going on.
Give us some tips. Give us some tips.
Yeah, it'd be for a few years as it comes back. It's about to half again. We're doing the halving, which is going to happen here soon, and that's going to drive the price up because the price always goes up when the halving occurs.
How long did it take you to get into that? Like, I guess you have to do a lot of reading and stuff, and not just one person, but you have to talk to a few people to kind of get the more ins and outs. It's kind of off the beaten track in a way.
It is, and I was lucky that my neighbor had introduced me to some other people who are also very knowledgeable. These aren't people who just dabble in it. These are people who their whole careers are dealing with Bitcoin. And so I was able to get a good listen to them and hear what they had to say. And then, of course, reading the books on it, there's a lot of books on it. So there's a lot you can read about it.
So let me ask this question, just as you say you read a lot of books on it, because you're known as a book reader from childhood and on. And you must have read dozens and dozens of books for this one, I'm assuming. Do you do anything else? Do you use that thing called the internet or the Google and things like that? Or is it pretty much a book guy?
I'm a book guy, pretty much. I use the internet to find the books. Where can I find the books? Where can I get the books? The information on the internet, you got to be so careful with. So careful with it. I'm not to say that I don't, if I need a quick date or a quick piece of information, I'll go on there, but I always flag that to go and check later and make sure it's right and double check on it because I don't trust much anything that comes off the internet at all. But it's a great place to go to find the books, to locate where I can get my hands on the books.
So you're saying you don't trust the internet? What?
Oh, wow. I mean, I
know Abraham Lincoln said that.
I know that's kind of radical to say, but
I thought everything there was real.
It's just all real. It's all real there because it's on the internet, so it's got to be right. Yeah,
that's got to be real. Each one of these books, and then book 18 here, is the story here that you're writing about, and with Bitcoin and the 40s, World War II. What is it you want to develop in your character in Cotton Malone?
Well, each book, I develop something more in his character. I explore an element of his character that I've never explored before, and I do that every novel. This novel explores regret because he comes face to face with someone from his past, someone very, he just never thought he would ever see again. And here it is. And he's not good with this emotion, and he's having to deal with it. So it was fun to bring him face to face with that. Very much so.
How do you relate to your character? How do you relate to Cotton Malone yourself?
Well, he's basically me. I mean, I used my personality to create him. So he's basically, it's me. Yeah. So there's no real surprises there, except that I do take him to more extremes, you know, that he goes to, and he deals with these extremes. So that's where I explore and take him on this journey as he begins to evolve and change. And he's changed a lot since the Templar Legacy in 2006, an awful lot.
Well, I ask questions that are always selfish for helping me because I'm building on a new character right now. Did you say, I'm going to write a book with Japanese gold, and I'm going to write a book Bitcoin, and I'm going to have cotton, and now this book's regret? Did you know it was regret going in, or did it just end up being regret was a theme?
I did not. I did not even come up with the angle. There's a surprise in the novel at the end, and I didn't conceive of that surprise until I was about three quarters of the way into the book. And it hit me all at once. I said, whoa, I need to go there. Absolutely. So, no, that was a late addition to everything. Very much so.
Well, let me ask this question then. And this is a process question. Sure. Did you have to go, when you rewrote, did you have to go back and say, okay, now I need to add stuff to go to this new ending I thought of? Okay.
Yes, I had to make some adjustments there. They weren't horrible. I call it more cosmetic surgery instead of transplant surgery. They weren't awful, but I did have to spend a few days making those adjustments so that I could foreshadow a little bit of that carefully, so they just didn't come out of left field. You don't want something just to boom out of nowhere. You got to earn it a little bit.
How do you feel when that surprise came along 2/3 of the way in?
Oh, I loved it. It was great. It changed the whole aspect of the book. And I said, whoa, this is great. This is exactly what I'm looking for. I just didn't see it coming. It was just one of those things I didn't see coming. And I said to myself, boy, I wish I had thought of that from the beginning.
Exactly. So does that, from the point of view of having written, geez, what are you, 20 plus years now? 21 years, yeah. How does that recharge, re-energize your writing batteries?
It's kind of fun a little bit when I said, well, that's really neat. I mean, it does, when you get a little surprise like that, that kind of surprises you and you go, fine. Yeah, it changes a little bit. It's not your same old, it's a little different. And this is definitely a little different because it's going to set up a whole change in Cotton's world that's coming over the next 3 books.
So tell us.
Oh, no, I can't tell you that. But it is going to change. The next 3 books, I don't want Cotton's world to stay the same. Nobody does. You want it to, we got to change it up a little bit, and that's what we're going to do.
Right. So what is it that Cotton can do or does in your series and in these books that you'd like to do, but you don't?
Oh, man. I mean, all the stuff he does, jumps out of the airplanes and does all the cool stuff and all that. Wouldn't that be a lot of fun to be able to do? But that is beyond my skill sets, way beyond.
Oh, you don't actually do it to find out what it's like?
No, I don't do it. I know some people think I do, but I really don't.
No, jumping out of a fully functional airplane. No, thank you.
Yeah, like he did in one thing when he did one parachute and him and Cassiopeia jumped out on one parachute. No, I hadn't done that.
Yeah, kind of sounds like fun to watch. Listen, so retired Justice Department operative, is there a reason why you selected that as his kind of past career?
Well, I needed him to have skills. He needed to have some skill sets because I knew he was going to do some extraordinary things. So he needed to be somewhat trained. And I didn't want him to be the same old kind of thing. So I said, I'm going to retire him out. I'm going to have him be a bookseller in Copenhagen, and I'm going to have him kind of get in trouble all the time. And that's what made Cotton a little different. That was his little twist on being different and being a little fresh. And that's kind of stuck over the last 21 years and now 18 books.
Now, you select areas like, okay, so Switzerland and locations that you pick, Luxembourg. Is there particular reasons why you select certain locations to fit in the story? And do you have a feel for them? Do you write them like a character as well?
Yes, my locales do become like characters in the books, and I try to make sure that I find new locales. So here, Luxembourg and Basel in Switzerland and Geneva and the Atlas Mountains in Morocco were all new places that Cotton had never been before. So it worked out really well. That's what I want. I want new and different places that the reader hopefully wants to go and check out too, because I was in the Atlas Mountains and it's really neat down there.
Was that just happened to be there? Was that actually booked?
No, I went there in 2019 to check out the whole place, and I realized it was going to be in a novel, and this was the one.
So how do you you're known for the historical fiction part too. How do you connect those historical fictions? Why did you pick, Alex would ask me, why did you pick Japan, and how do you put these two different DNAs together?
Well, I had Yamashita's gold in my idea box for a long time, and it's really amazing because it's true. All that gold that was buried in the Philippines after World War II, only a small fraction of which was found, some of it by American intelligence, who kept it and used it. All of that's really interesting stuff, but I never could put a novel together for it. I never could just say, where's the novel? Where can I make this work? And then Bitcoin always fascinated me. And then it hit me all at once. I think I can put these two together. I think I can make this work because the flaw in the Bitcoin system requires a lot of money to make it work. And what do I have? I got a lot of gold. So when I realized I could put the two together, boom, I had a story. And that's when it all came.
Well, I mean, did you have to, they're basically totally different tracks.
Very much so.
That intersect of research. So how did you separate it, keep it straight? What was your plan?
Well, I knew that with the Bitcoin that I said, if I could set up something beforehand and lead into it where the CIA is involved in this, and the CIA was involved with the Yamashita's gold and with the Black Eagle Trust. The CIA, according to one legend, was involved in the creation of Bitcoin in 2008. Some believe it was actually being created as an alternate financial system in case the world's financial systems collapsed, which was on the danger of in 2008. So I saw all these little threads that were connected. I just sort of brought them all together and tied them together so they fit. And it just came together after a while. And I said, whoa, I got a book now. I think I can make this work.
Do you put a subtext? Do you put a meaning in your books?
Not really, no. I try not to do that. It's hard enough to write a novel, but a novel with a meaning is really tough. I will say here, you learn Bitcoin from both sides. I give you both sides of everything. I give you, the enthusiast side and the skeptic side. I give you both of those. I don't try to make a judgment on anything. That's nearly not my function. And I leave that up to the reader. I just want to give you the information where you can make that decision yourself. So I'm not a meaning writer. No, I don't really do that.
And your supporting characters, where do they come from?
Well, you got to have people to back all these folks up, and I've got Cassiopeia Vitt, who backs Cotton up a lot, Stephanie Nell, Derek Coker. He's from The Last Kingdom. So I'm bringing in people from the other books, and they're coming into play, and they're becoming, players on the field. My bad guys, this is Catherine Gledhill. She's a sociopath, basically an amoral sociopath who's greedy and wants to do, wants more than she should get, but she can't help herself. And all of these characters together, Kira Lota was an interesting character who basically, is a Russian who, again, another amoral character who likes to kill people. And then Ayako was really good because I got to deal with the Japanese angle a little bit, and I wanted to do that very much so. So it was fun to bring all these together, and they all fit. It all came together really well, and I think the reader's going to really enjoy this story. It's a fun romp over about 3 days.
Okay, well, there's a whole other question. Let me write that one down. Let's stick with all your books. Your book, you have 18 of them, and plus the other, other ones standalone, the Daniel stuff. How do you make them standalone when they're all connected?
You keep them the same but different. Always okay. The same but different. The same is action, history, secrets, conspiracies. Cotton Malone, Cassiopeia, Stephanie, the characters, same. Different locales, different thing from history, different antagonists, different motivations. All of those things are different. So each book has to be the same but different. It's a tall order. It's tough to do. And I work at it very hard to make that there. You don't want the books too serial because people aren't going to read every book. They got to be able to pick a book up wherever, get right into it. But you also don't want to make them too episodic. You've got to recognize that these characters have been around before. So it's just a fine line that I walk. But I make sure that you can come into my books in any place you want, read them comfortably, and not miss anything or not feel like you were left out.
So you've mentioned the readers many times, and how much are the readers looking over your shoulders, tens of millions of readers looking over your shoulder as you're writing your books?
A lot, because I've got to make sure that this book is something there. Remember, I'm writing a book for 2 years from now. I wrote this book in 2022. So I'm thinking about what you're going to find interesting in 2 years from now. And I've got to make sure that I make it interesting, and I got to make sure that it works in that regard. It was interesting to me, but I got to make sure you're going to like it. So they're always up over my shoulder. They're always looking at me saying, okay, no, don't do that. Yeah, okay, that's good. I kind of stick with it, try to make sure that they're going to like it, hopefully 2 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm taking notes on that. And I also pulled out my notes from last time we spoke, and I'm pretty sure that I can't get my handwriting. I'm pretty sure it was you because you mentioned your book happens in a short time frame. And if I remember correctly, you said start your books as far as you possibly can.
Yes, close to the end as possible.
As close to the end as possible. And I tell you what, Steve, I think about that almost every day I write, that advice, to try to get as close as you can to the end. And that just really drives the action. So why that? I mean, why does it work? What's your philosophy behind it?
Because it makes the story shorter. And shorter is always better. Always, always, always. But shorter is also harder, much harder. I used to write novels at about 115,000 words, something like that. My novels now are about 100 to 105. I've taken 10, 15,000 words out of the books. You may say, well, that's pretty easy to do. Actually, it's not. It's actually harder to do that. But I want the books tighter. I want them tighter, smoother, cleaner. And when you start a story as close to the end as possible, you take the first step along that way. And I'm very conscious of that, and every writer should be conscious of that.
I am. It's one of the best advice I've had since I started with Al. It's great. If you're listening, do that. It really works.
Well,
so thank you.
There you go. Now you got it. So how do you get into the mindset, first of all, of not only a female character, but an amoral sociopath, and from another country as well, like a Russian or...
It's kind of easy with the amoral people because they have no morals.
Right.
So you just let them do whatever they want. You do whatever you want. You just go crazy. Do whatever you want. It's easy. They're actually easier to deal with because with an immoral person, they actually have morals. They just violate them all the time. But with an amoral person, they don't care. Nothing matters to them. They just go along and do whatever they need to do. And so it's actually not hard at all. And I've had several bad guys like that. Sometimes I give them some value structure and sometimes I don't.
Right. And do you write from the female point of view differently than when you write from the male?
A little bit, but my female characters are all very strong. They're all very strong females. So it's not that difficult for me to go back and forth. I like my female characters to be tough, and they're all tough.
And the violence on the page, how do you address violence? How do you write it?
I'm careful about violence. You have to have some, but I don't do a lot. This book at the end has probably the most violence I've ever had in a novel. But there was a reason why that had to happen. It wasn't gratuitous. It had to happen. And the reader will understand that when they get there, why that had to happen. But it's probably the most violent scene I've ever written there. But I realized when I got to the end of the book that it had to be that way. There was no other way around it. So, you know, that's the way it is. But I'm careful with that. And that's why my readership's about 50-50 male-female. The female reader has no problem with the little bit of violence that I have, and I have just enough to keep the males happy.
So how do you, given the fact that you're putting in violence and as much as you can or not, as little as you can, do you pull in your three-day story, current events, actions, things that are happening topically as part of your story?
No, I don't. That dates the book too much. And remember, exactly. It's going to be published 2 years later.
Yeah.
So, no, I do not do that. I don't want to date the book like that. So I don't do that. No, I stay away from those things. Like in my novels, there's no COVID.
No COVID. That's the next question.
There's no COVID. No, COVID never happened. And because I figured people live through it, they don't want to read about it too. So there's no COVID in my book. So we just move on and go. And I don't do that because again, this book was written 2 years ago. So I don't want to date it like that.
I'd imagine you also have to be careful about some of the subjects. Like when you chose Bitcoin, you don't know where it's going to be in a couple of years.
Yeah, it was scaring. It was scaring me to no end because it dropped down to nothing for a while.
Yeah, right.
And I was getting a little concerned, but now it's bounced back up and doing fine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you just never know some things where they're going to go, right, I guess.
No, I didn't. And I was watching it drop. I went, oh, gosh, I hope the bottom doesn't fall out here. I hope this thing comes back. Now, the Bitcoin people were telling me it's going to come back, no problem. And it did. It came right back.
Are there topics that you seem to put the topics together? I got in my idea file. You know, let's put these together. Are there topics you just kind of say, nah, this is not a Steve Berry book?
Terrorism is one of those. I don't deal with terrorism very much.
Because?
I just don't. I don't find it interesting to write about, and I think it's been written about to death. I don't deal with Middle Eastern crises very much. Almost never, in fact. The Alexandria link was the closest I ever came to that. I stay away from that area, too. Why? Because I think people hear about it all the time. They don't want to read about it. And plus, it's been done to death. I want to find subjects that's not been done. That's what I'm looking for. And that's what I search for. And so I stay away from those. I don't, as I said, COVID, I don't touch COVID, don't touch anything like that. I don't do a lot of bioterrorism. I did it one time with Venetian Betrayal a little bit, but I don't do much with that either. I kind of stay away from that as well. I don't know why. I like more political things, economic things, those kinds of things that interest me more.
When you write a book like this, I'd imagine at the end of it, it changes some of your perspective on things.
It did with Bitcoin because I knew nothing about it. Now I understand it. So I have it's not a mystery to me anymore. So it's a lot more interesting to me now that I understand it. And I hope the reader will be that way when they get finished reading the book.
Oh, yeah. They all buy in. So you're working the Bitcoin now.
Well, they don't have to buy in, but they have to. I'd like for them to at least understand it.
Wow. Hardest thing about writing a book like this?
Bringing it all together, making it work, making it make sense. It's got to make sense. And so it doesn't, the reader doesn't go, oh, man, that's just nuts. I mean, I can't, that's too much. You want the reader to go, oh, wow, whoa, never thought about that. Is that really, could that be? That's what you want. And that's the hardest thing, mixing that information with action to get that reaction.
So you do something in your books, which I think is pretty unique. Tell me about your author notes.
I make sure at the end that you know what's true or false when you leave the book. And so I spend a lot of time on that note. And I tell you a lot of information in that note that fills in the gaps of the novel. That's why you do not want to read that until you're done, because it's going to fill in the gaps for you. But it's something I do in every novel. I think I owe that to the reader to make sure that you don't leave there with any misconceptions.
Isn't that just hard to write without their notes?
No, I just go, what I do is I take the manuscript and I go page by page and I make my notes. And I say, I need to explain that. I need to explain that. I need to show that. I make that whole list and then I go and start writing it. And it's about 2,000 words and it lays out everything very clearly, so that you know when you leave that book, you go, okay, I got it now. I know what's true and know what's false. I think I owe that to the reader after we've had that ride together.
Any of those readers gone, Steve, you did make a mistake on 183 here. Your author note's wrong.
Oh, yeah. I get that all the time. I mean, I get, you know, some mistake here and there. They're honest mistakes. If it is a mistake, we fix it in a later edition. And I appreciate someone finding those things for me.
Well, and speaking of that, how do people get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Is there social media?
I got everything there. You can go to Facebook. I have a Facebook fan page, but I also have a website, steveberry.org. All of the books are there, including this book, and you can check out all 23 novels. They're all there. And we have another one coming June 11th with Luke Daniels, who's going to have a second book June 11th. Called Red Star Falling, that deals with the lost library of Ivan the Terrible, which is a pretty cool artifact that I think the readers are going to find. I know I found it fascinating. And then Cotton will be back next year with a book called The Medici Return. It deals with the Medici family from Florence, which I've always wanted to do something with.
Is the Luke Daniels books, those are with Grant, aren't they?
They are, with Grant Blackwood. And we did that. And then we're working on the third Luke Daniels book that'll come in 2026.
Do you like writing with a partner?
I enjoy writing with Grant. Yeah. Him and I get along really well. It's the only way I could do the second book, because I there's no way I can write two by myself. It's impossible.
Fantastic. So we'll have that up on the website along with your book, The Atlas Maneuver. And it's Cotton Malone, book 18. Thank you for being here, yep. Steve Berry.
Thanks for having
Thank you.
Me.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.